Hello, and welcome back to another episode from the Crypto Idiots. This is the Chemist here, and I'm bringing you some editorial comments, I guess, is the best way to put this. I started the podcast with my buddies here a few weeks ago, and we're just kind of getting launched. And just about the main way that I understand, especially a startup like us, we're tiny, right? We're investing just any of our own capital here to get this off the ground. We're doing a lot of this stuff ourselves. And I was looking around, like, how do I get listeners that are engaged in this topic? Specifically, I didn't really want to put this all over the world to people who aren't interested in cryptocurrencies or those types of things. So I go in there and post a Facebook ad, which I understand is one of the most efficient ways. I don't know. Maybe you know something better. Let me know. I'll love to hear any ideas, of course. But when putting that out, right, you don't have a lot of control over specifically who and when and what it goes to. You basically give Facebook some general guidelines and say, go advertise for me. General guidelines being, you know, key it into certain demographics, so on and so forth. If you haven't used it before, it's pretty efficient. It does get some people listening. I know some of you folks probably came from there. But, you know, an interesting thing happened. It made me kind of stop and go back and think about, you know, what crypto really looks like to people who are completely uneducated. I get, you know, a couple of comments that are like, oh, it's a scam. I can't believe these people scamming all the time. And I go, huh, you know, I guess that's a way to look at it. I suppose it's kind of like, you know, when there's some science that you're not really familiar with, it looks like magic when you see it happen. Like when you're making thermite out of just, you know, rust and aluminum and magnesium, and you light a match, light a lighter, and boom, you've got a 5,000 plus degree reaction that comes out of something that literally could be laying next to each other, right? So when you look at that and you don't understand how that chemical reaction works, it's like, whoa, that's magic, right? And I feel like that about crypto, because in the fact that people actually think that it's a scam. Now, what does have to be thought about is it's where some people may think it's scam, where some people consider, you know, the volatility as the shaky thing. And there's always the 51% rule. It made me kind of stop and step back and go, well, you know, maybe I need to think about this a little more basic, right? I did fairly basic introductory in my introduction, if you haven't listened to that, to understand kind of what crypto is. But as I said, this is a little bit more editorial, talking about the scam of crypto. So when looking at it, you know, if you don't understand it, it is a little bit off-putting, especially if you're a non-tech person. And when you try to explain to people, and I've done that number of times, saying, hey, this is basically math. It's making a math wall, right? And that's just outside of people's understanding to a large part. We won't call it a firewall. We're going to call it a extremely complex math equation. And when you look back at the history of cryptography, going well before we were monetizing this, right? It's a way to encode and keep things secure. That's where the name derives from. So when somebody who's uneducated about crypto comes in and looks at, hey, these people go on here and put money in this app and it poops it back out, or you lose a bunch of money, well, yeah, it probably does look like a scam. So it made me think, again, like I say, back up and start with very basic things. So let's talk about how this can be perceived as a scam. And I'm going to try to go back to the very, very basic understanding of what it is. And this may help if you haven't, if you're just interested in it, if you want to say, oh, it is a total scam, cool, hang up, close my podcast down. You don't have to listen. If you want to see why it is not a scam, but why it is extremely volatile, and it is not for everybody. I certainly don't want that to be the concept that I'm trying to portray, that everybody should jump into crypto on day one. That's not the goal. The goal is to introduce it, and those people who are on the edge of deciding whether to go into crypto, whether it be mining, whether it be investing, whether it be just holding or doing rapid exchanges like day trading or something like that. I just want you, those people that are interested in that, maybe have a little bit of a gambler tendency, would maybe want to hear some of these things. Okay. So when you're looking at crypto, and for the completely uninitiated, to demystify the scam, if you will, basically you have people that put a value on things, right? We can arbitrarily say that this gun that I bought is worth $17,000, and that's what we put it for sale, up for sale. And if somebody buys that gun at $17,000, that gun's value is all of a sudden $17,000, even if I only paid $150 for it originally. Okay. So I've changed the scope of what people are willing to pay. And this is how everything works, right? That if you have a rare item, regardless, you know, maybe you have a dollar bill that, or a coin, let's say a penny, you've got a penny that is unique and maybe old, maybe it's a misprint or something like that, then you can establish a value and say it's worth $10 million. If somebody pays that, guess what that penny is now worth? It's $10 million. So if I'm to have that gun or that penny and put it back on the market, or I find another one of those, right? And I say, well, this one sold for $17,000 on the gun instance. Well, I can put it up for sale for $17,000 and assign that value to it honestly. And that's directly what is happening. And with the penny, the same thing. If somebody were to pay $10 million for that penny, the rest of the world may only think it's worth a penny, but somebody paid that. So that increases the inherent value of the object if you were to find an exact replica. Okay. So when you're looking at crypto, it's much like that, that people assign a value to this. The value is assigned by how many people are investing in it and how much total money is invested in it. Sounds like a company, right? I mean, if you think about what a company is and how it trades and why people put it on the stock market, you think about a small mom and pop store that decides to expand and they put another store in town with them, and then they start to grow and say, oh, well, this is going over really well. People are very receptive to this. I'm going to put up 10 more stores. And then you start realizing, hey, this is a great volume play. So do you take the immediate money that you have, or do you start to get in and say, well, you know, if I were buying 10,000 of these sides of beef for my grocery store butcher shop to go into our stock, instead of buying 100, I could get that stuff at a significantly reduced rate, right? Because I'm going to buy so much, you start getting volume discounts on your purchases, and you go, well, I don't have the money to buy 10,000 sides of beef, but if I did, I would make this much more money. And then you start spreading that across the entire grocery store with each item and say, okay, well, I'm going to make 20% more by purchasing this much volume, or I'm going to make 10% more on this can of beans than I did if I was just purchasing my current volume. But I need to raise capital. I've only got 10 stores right now, and I can't afford to purchase all that stuff. And that's where you start seeing people go into the stock market. It's not going into the stock market. it's putting parts of their company up for sale, right? When you establish a business of just about any sort, and even if it's just a small mom and pop or LLC or something like that, you're establishing basically your shares at that point. So ultimately, I can start a business and say, there's 100 shares. I'm going to give 51 of these to myself, and I'm going to give 49 shares to my partner. Okay. So that'll leave me with controlling interest, and we'll kind of tie back to that here in a bit with crypto. So now I have controlling interest. My partner's helping fund the thing, so he's getting 49% of the earnings. I'm putting out 49% or 51% of the earnings, and then we both decide together whether to reinvest or cash out some of that. Okay. So now we go to the, we say, hey, I need to figure out how to expand, or let's see what we can do to expand and raise capital to get these things on the ground. You know, we've got a net worth of probably about $5 million right now. To do and get to these price break bulk order discounts that are going to make us so much more money, we need about $100 million. Forget that. Let's say $500 million. All right. Now that we've got this target of $500 million, we're going to go, all right, we decided to do 1 million shares, and we're going to keep 51% and sell 490,000 of these. Man, in order to raise that $500 million, I'm going to have to charge $1,000 per point in my company, per share. $1,000. Are people likely to do that on a startup? Well, no. So then the company decides, well, you know what? I'm going to take and say, we're going to get to this dream buy down price from our suppliers is going to take us around $500 million. But we do get enough of a break if we only expand to this region. And if we do this regional expansion, we're only going to need about $100 million. But we still want that $500 million at the end of the day. So what do I do? Do I put out just enough stocks at $1,000 a piece? Well, no. Let's look at some other stocks that are out there and where they're valuated at, right? So I need this $100 million now, right? And I look at the stock market and I say a fair going price for a startup is like maybe $2 a share. We can probably get that on an IPO, right? We think we can get that offer out there. So now we've got to have 50 million shares to get that $100 million. So in order for us to keep 51%, we're going to have to bump up our company stock count to, what do we go up to? 100 million shares plus 110 million shares, so I can keep that 51% interest. So you start looking at these things and you start to look at fair market value of $2. Okay. Well, let's say we approach it a different way and scale it. Okay. So we want to get to that $100 million. But do we really want to give 49% of our company away to get $100 million? Well, no, because that doesn't achieve the end goal that makes it worthwhile to publicly list my company. So I want to take and break that down a little further. And let's say, well, you know, if we're willing to give away 49% of our company for $500 million, then what about, do we then take that $500 million, right? Divide that or multiply that times 49%, and we've got $245 million. Okay. So I'm looking at that, and that's ultimately what I am willing to sell through in order to get this $500 million capital, because we think the purchase discounts and the volume that we're going to be transacting are going to far exceed this $5 million business we have, and we're going to be able to keep more money as the 51% shared stockholders. We're going to be able to keep far more money because of the huge volume discount. So I start going $245 million. Okay, that's putting out there, that's assuming a $2 stock price. So likely what I'm going to do is put, you know, let's put out a far smaller portion of our business instead of 1/5 to get the 100 million out of the 500 million I need. Why don't I put out 1/10 of my stocks? Okay, so now I'm going to look at this and say my total company is going to be valued at that 51% right out of the gate at $1.1 billion. It's a lot of money, right? And we've got this $1.1 billion valuated company. And we want to take that and divide it by a fair stock price of, we say, 2. We've got 550 million shares that we can offer in our IPO. But we're only going to try to get that first $100 million, let's say, on 15% of the total company. So we're going to say, if we were to do $1.1 billion again, okay, and we're to take that at $2 a share, and that's going to give us, and I'm doing the math here just so I can make sure and give you guys factual information. I don't want to mislead anybody. So we're going to give that a $2 a share. That's 550 million shares. And I want to sell off 10... What did I say, about 15%? So that's 82,500,000 shares. Okay, that's a little bit more than what I needed, so I don't have to sell off that much of my company. What I'm gonna do is do this 1.1 billion, because that came out to $160 million, basically. So let's do times 0.1, and that gets me really close, right? 10% of my shares valued at $2, if I have 550 million shares, is going to get me to where I need to be. Do I want to do that? Is my company going to be valuated at that right away? Probably not. So now we've got to build in some projections, right? We've got to start saying, well, it's $2 now, but with this business plan, I'm going to get X amount of ROI, our return on operations, and we're going to scale, and I believe out of the gate we can get $2. But then our stock price is going to go up in quarter one to 2.25, and then quarter two to 2.5, and then it's going to take me a whole nother year, and then it's going to go up to 3.5, 350 a share. So now that initial ask that I asked from the world was, hey, for $2, I'll get you in on this company. Just get me up to $100 million. Great. Now, but we're projecting a $1.1 billion business. The world doesn't know that. I mean, we can give them a prospectus that shows that, and that's where stockholder meetings become so important. And we can show them our business plan on how we're going to get there. But everybody in business and these stockholders know that things happen, so you have to build in. So you're doing all these things to figure out your stock price. Once you figure out how many stocks you're going to put out there by doing all this reasoning and planning and forecasting, which, believe me, is as much of a scam as anything, because you don't have, you know, who predicts COVID? Who would have loved to have launched an IPO, you know, 2 weeks before COVID started and watch everybody cash out their risk money that they put in your high risk company? High risk because it's new. So we're at this point, you know, this company is doing this, right? And let's just say, for argument's sake, we settled on doing, selling off 100 million shares. Okay. And just to get to our number that we had, and it ended up becoming a much more significant part of our business than we wanted it to be, but they valued that share by purchasing Intuit at $2, they valued that share at $2. So now what is my company worth? On paper, your company then is worth, yep, 10 times that amount, because you were able to sell those shares at $2 a piece. By straight math, and of course our stockbrokers of the world or whatnot understand this, that there's not really that much assets. That's where you go into the complication of what assets you actually have plus your stocks. But ultimately, on paper, you've got a $1 billion company from getting that $100 million investment in 10% of your business. Or you went to a venture capitalist and got that 10% before you went public. Okay. So I hope that's tying, you know, part of this is more remedial, like basic stock market stuff. This is not a factual situation or whatnot. This is just giving you a generalized idea of how companies start and then go into the public sector. But one of the key things I want you to remember out of this is the valuation came from offering a stock which had a value of literally next to nothing compared to what I sold it for. Literally next to nothing, okay? Because I had a company that basically had a net worth of $5 million plus inventory. And in a grocery store, that inventory is pretty volatile. But basically, I had a company that was worth $5 million today. And because I priced it correctly and I had a great business plan and I was able to get the confidence of the public involved in my company to say, hey, if I support these guys at $2, I can easily see them getting to $5 or $10. You know, you're projecting and betting on that business and betting on not just the business, but the owners of the business. And do they have the capability to pull it off? They give you a pretty plan, but do you have the confidence that they are going to be the group to pull it off? So now you've basically turned something into nothing. Now you've got capital. You can start building out and driving your stock price up. Now, the next thing that happens is when you start selling off, you know, we had this projection that we needed to get to $500 million investment capital. You're going to get some cash and growth along the way, but you also have to pay dividends, pay back, you know, stock sales, things like that, or dividends or reinvest into your company. You're going to have additional funds that are coming from the business itself. That's what's going to be showing that, hey, this is a good bet, right? You're going to have pretty significant growth to make that happen. But you still need more to invest, right? You still want to get that $500 million. You've done the projections. You still need that number, even scaling it up. Then you get to this $500 million. You work your butt off. You know, you sell up and you're at, let's say we're at $300 million of our $500 million. You've had to sell off 25% of your company, 30% of your company, let's say. And you go, man, this is really a tough position because now we need to figure out how to get $1 billion invested in the stock market. We've grown so well. We're going to go international. We think we can do this in Canada. We can do the same thing, but we're going to need more capital. And crap, we've only got 19% of our company left to sell off. So what do you do then? You start getting up to that edge and you're like, man, that's going to be more than more shares at our current valuation than we're able to sell off at that price. So that's where a stock split comes, where a company files and basically has their entire stock portfolio of that original 550 million stocks. They're going to go up to 1.1 billion shares of that stock. That way they don't just have 19% to sell off. Now they've got what? They doubled their stock price, doubled their valuation by splitting those stocks. And the previous stockholders love it because they get additional value for their stock that they have. They get to live that big life, right? And that'll give other people confidence to come in and invest in your company. It's real easy. Just make up a new number, more or less. It's more complicated than that. But when they're basically splitting, it's to make more stock available to sell off because you still don't want to get rid of that 51% controlling interest. That gets to be in a danger zone where somebody could vote you off the island, right? So all that stuff is really rudimentary stock stuff. Okay, now how it relates to crypto, that's the question of the day, right? That's where the reality from the scam, from whatever comes into play, and you say, okay, this is how this crypto thing works in a very similar fashion, but not quite exactly the same. So now we got this crypto thing. How in the hell does this tie together? What does this mean? Why are we going over stock price, stock price, stock price, stock price? It's because we talked about scam, right? This is just understanding the basic structural integrity and process in which a company starts and then comes to market and then comes to a publicly traded company and how that works in a very general aspect, right? Because we're talking pretty basic stuff here. And we're going to talk to crypto now, and how does that relate? And I think the easiest way, without getting too complicated straight off the bat, is to talk about Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin is very much like gold, okay? It's even called the digital gold. It's frequently called that because of what it is and what it does for the crypto economy. So what exactly do I mean what it does for the crypto economy? So when you look at Bitcoin, it's basically like your company in the previous example. They came out and established this new thing that people bought into to assign values to it, right? It just was the, instead of having a stock created, they had an actual coin created. Wait. It's not a coin. It is a mathematical equation. Well, that's where it gets tricky. And I think that's where some people start to lose it and go, what do you mean? Like, I could buy a head of lettuce from this place. What can I do with this? Well, about the same thing you can do with gold, right? If you walk into a grocery store, or you walk into a superstore of any kind, and you have a bar of gold in your hand, and you try to hand it to somebody at the register, what do they do? Now, the smart ones would probably say, yeah, I got you. I'll let you pay for that $4 in groceries with that brick of gold. But it ultimately, they don't have a way to transact that. So we assign a value to it, and what do we do with that? We assign a value to this gold, and we assign you a bunch of pieces of paper, promissory notes, or dollar bills for your gold that you've now invested, and they give you that in exchange. And there we have the gold standard. So now when we're looking at crypto, think of it much the same way with Bitcoin. Well, who says gold is worth this much? Well, we did. We evaluated it by saying we can get this much stuff for our dollar, and that dollar, we have X amount of printed currency, or quote unquote, lappable quote unquote, backed currency with gold, and that establishes the limit of how many dollars we have until we split the dollar, is more or less what's happening in the world. It's where maybe we don't have all that gold put aside for every dollar bill, but maybe we made the dollar more valuable. So we've basically established, like, with Bitcoin being gold, it is a thing, just like that hunk of rock is, that we prize so much, make rings out of, and we swear undying loyalty to our spouses with that hunk of rock metal, whatever you want to call it. Well, Bitcoin is ultimately just a digital asset, just like gold is an asset. And then Johnny said, hey, if I own this asset, I'm willing to pay a nickel for it, for one of those. Okay, forget the math, forget everything. I got this now to make it easier for the layperson. They called it Bitcoin. They didn't call it bit equation. They didn't call it an extremely complicated math equation. It takes hundreds of computers to put together to make one. No, we've made a fungible token, a repeatable token that is assigned a certain value because somebody paid that much for it. Okay, now we're going, oh, okay, you got to quit thinking about it as this math equation. I say that a lot to explain specifically what it is, but ultimately it's an asset. It is a thing. It may not be something you can pick up, but neither is your gas bill. Neither is your water bill. How much water did you actually use this month? How much gas did you actually use? Did you pick that up? Did you go out there and measure all of that stuff yourself? No, a computer did that. Computer measured it, printed out your bill, and sent it to you. Yeah, I know they come wrong sometimes. I get it. Believe me, I've got them. But ultimately, it's still a computer that's processing all this information and saying, you owe this much for that asset. If it's easier to picture, maybe think about it as, I get this digital asset instead of a dollar bill to represent this gold that I have supposedly in the Federal Reserve Bank. Okay. And you tie it to an object like that, understand that's why it's marketed as crypto coin, cryptocurrency, because we don't want anybody to be confused about this whole math equation thing. Now, we can talk about what that is, and I've done that a little bit in my intro, if you want to dial back and listen to that. And we can get into it further at a future time, but I'm staying really basic here. But understand that that's why when you say, oh, it's a coin, what do you mean? Well, and I think that's one of the driving reasons why Bitcoin started off the way it did, because it does give you something tangible, or you can put it on something tangible so you can literally put it in your pocket and carry it around. So you generate this coin, or you purchase this coin, are part of a coin at this point because it's pretty expensive. Well, you can take that coin or that part of a coin and store it on a hard drive and carry it with you anywhere in the world. Okay, there's a lot of development since then, and we'll get into those in future episodes, but I'm staying real basic with the Bitcoin principle to understand what it is. So now that we kind of got an idea that Bitcoin is basically gold, and I don't want to skim over that too much. So basically your coin, which is a math equation, that you own has been assigned a value because people are buying these up for a certain amount of value. Banks, Elon Musk, before he decided to bash it, probably is still holding a bunch of it in a holding company that he doesn't have to admit that he has. Just kidding. But if you've got this asset and people are willing to pay for it and say, hey, I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars for this, well, that asset becomes worth that much. Well, Bitcoin, unlike some cryptos and unlike the stock market, is a fixed number. There's going to be 21 million Bitcoins made, and that's it. It's over beyond that. There is no splitting it and doubling up. That's why you hear all these theories about Bitcoin just skyrocketing. Well, right now, there are more being generated. There are more being mined or dug out of the earth and really dug out of the worldwide world of math, but there are more being generated right now. So the price is pretty volatile, because as it comes, more supply comes on the market, the demand lowers, the price goes down. Or you have less people, more people want to cash out. Hell, you know, if you bought into Bitcoin 5 years ago for $1,000, then you're retired. I mean, that's it. You're done. You're over. Unless you just want to make a whole bunch more money for fun. Right. So, I mean, people cash out all the time. You look at this year, it's topped out around $65 million. So, or $65,000 per Bitcoin. Right now, I think it's running just over 30. But at that one point, hey, that means everybody that had Bitcoin and was interested in it was willing to pay $65,000 per coin. That's not somebody arbitrarily setting a price. That's what people were paying for it. Just like they pay for gold and get their dollar bills, right? So, or their extra store that they've grown as a reference back to our original example. But people have decided that it's worth that much. Well, yeah, people can certainly decide that, and they can certainly decide to sell it off and drive the price down. This is where the volatility comes into play, right? Because this is different than the general stock market. You know, if you were to think about it, and you're this sharp headhunter guy, and you were out there looking for new businesses, and you went and looked at this grocery store from our fictional example earlier, and you, right off the bat, soon as the IPO launched, you were like, man, I 100% believe in this company, and I'm going to leverage everything I have. And I have quite a bit, so I'm going to buy up every stock that they put in their IPO at $2, because I know they're going to go up to $350 within a year. And that's 150% money, or excuse me, 75% money made on top of my investment. Boom, done. I'm going to do that. There's only three people that own that company. Well, in the case of Bitcoin, when it launched and as it was coming along, it was very transparent about only having 20 million, 21 million total coin at the end of the day. It wasn't worth anything at that time, but there were people that believed in it that said, oh, well, if I buy a whole bunch of this right now at 50 cents, when it starts getting rare in a few years, I think it's going to make a go of it. Well, now you've got these shareholders, if you will, or coin holders, but in crypto they call it HODL. Let's be clear, that was some drunk guy was trying to, was on YouTube and saying how he's going to hold all of his crypto, and he was too drunk and he said HODL. So now it was such a fad on the internet, everybody got excited about it, and that's what they officially call it. Unofficially now is, we're going to HODL that Bitcoin. Well, you think about these people that invested, you know, $1,000, $10,000 back when it was 50 cents and a dollar. Well, they're major stockholders now. They're major coin holders, or they own a large percentage of the Bitcoin asset in the world. So guess what happens when they cash out? Price goes down because supply just went up. We've got these massive holders because it wasn't adapted early. Oh, it was just like that store where that one investor bought up the entire lot, and now there's only three investors in the whole world. And guess what? He has as much of a voting share as your junior partner does, right? Well, that's where I was going to go back to that 51%. And this is where you'll see people talk about this. Because of the nature of Bitcoin, the nature of crypto in general, the whole benefit of it is there is no 51% owner. There is a supply of Bitcoin generated daily, monthly, yearly, for a little while longer until that 21 million gets hit and you buy it and then it runs out. You might buy it from somebody else that's putting it up on the market for sale, but you can't get to 51% ownership. There's no way. There's already more than 49% of the total value out there. However, if you are to get to 51%, you would have control of the entire currency, just like you would with a company. And you could do some malicious things, right? You could completely dictate the pricing on Bitcoin. You could ultimately change the structure of it, and being that you actually own the company. But prior to that, you can't own 51% of these cryptos. If you find one of these little knockoff cryptos that are coming up out of the ground and you read up about them and see where the distribution of their coins are, and you find out 51% is with one person, just stay away from that, because that's going to be a nightmare. It's already very manipulatable, if that's a word. You can manipulate the crypto if you're large shareholders just by creating market disruption, right? So if you're to do something like you've got, let's say, $10 billion worth of Bitcoin and you put it all on the market at one time, yeah, you're going to manipulate the price. And you sell out and you sell out and you sell out until that price comes down low enough for you to be happy with that $10 billion. Say you sell out $3 billion of it, and then the price is cut in half because of the big rush. Well, then you go, okay, well, I'm going to buy right back into it at a lower price. Bam, just made money. It's like shorting a stock. That's what you have to watch for. It's not a scam. It is manipulation. And that's what you have to watch out for with crypto. That's where the risk comes. Because if you ride the wave in concert with the price, and my previous Facebook post from this day's recording that said, listen to our podcast and buy the dips. Okay, that's a big common saying in the crypto world, is buy it when it dips, sell it when it goes high. There's a lot of indicators that can help you determine that. We'll talk about some of those in more advanced episodes where we're talking about stochastic oscillators and how you can use those to not predict, but gauge the worth and the trends that are going on, which they're used. Stochastic oscillators are used to identify trends of all kinds. But when you're able to kind of go with that flow, you can catch the buy on the lows, sell on the highs, you make a ton of money. Now, where it seems like a scam is sometimes that happens in a day. Like, I have personally sat down on one of these sport coins, you'll hear me call them, are meme coins, but I call them sport investing coins or sport coins, because it, like, you're actively playing sport and you've got to be fast, right? Because I'll sit there and watch the price go up 20%, down 25%, up 30%, down 20%. Do that 5 times within a day, right? And now you catch all those dips. I personally sat there and played with $100 and turned it into $200 in one day by buying low, selling high, buying low. And I just more or less got lucky. That one's a hard one to predict, but I'm sitting there watching it. It was a day off I had, and I'm watching it be really erratic in the night before. And I'm watching it go up, go down, go up, go down. I was like, all right, let's see how fast I can click my finger and get these buy and sell orders put in here. And just for sport, that's a possibility. Now, Bitcoin, with the sheer volume it has, it takes a little bit longer to move, but still everything is going 100 times faster than most of the stock market. And the way I envision it, I didn't even go research this, but you know, people that have can validate this and call me. call me a liar. I'm not lying. I'm telling you, I don't know. But what I envision is when the stock market first launched, it was much the same thing. Because people don't know what the hell they were doing, right? That now they figured out the math. They figured out all these things that go into it. And they're much, much smarter. So just to kind of bring all this point to a conclusion. And again, this is just really talking about Bitcoin. When you get into the other stuff, there are a lot of more complicated ways that crypto coins are managed from these different types, that they've progressed and they've gone past, you know, this energy sucking Bitcoin model, which, you know, it wasn't so bad at first, but when you start getting up into the top ends, it gets harder and harder to make each Bitcoin. That's why the power draw is so bad. I mean, at one point you could make a decent wage on just mining Bitcoin with your personal home computing stuff. Well, now it's taking all these dedicated massive amounts of computing technology to generate one Bitcoin. So long story short is it really isn't a scam. There are some that out there that are. There are some cryptos that are. There are people that, just like in business, they don't have any scruples and they take advantage of people. So yeah, I mean, there is an opportunity for a scam, but can you tell me that that's not happening on Wall Street every day? I don't believe it. So even though it is, like I say, very volatile, it is not for everybody. 100%. I would never say everybody go do that. In fact, what I recommend everybody does is take a small amount of cash, I mean small, and stick it into some crypto of your choice that maybe you've researched, or maybe you just want to try it out and see what happens. Maybe you heard somebody give you a tip. Put a small amount in there and play with it and watch it. Understand its volatility. Understand that it's normal for you to double your money in a week or go down half of your money in a day. Once you understand that volatility and the fact that you can cash in and out very, very fast, right? It depends on your fees. That's a whole nother thing, a whole nother topic about fees and transferring stuff around. But ultimately, I have literally left the house with my wrong debit card. And that's just a total accident on my part. And I was like, crap. And I was getting ready to walk in the store. And I went, I got a couple hundred on Coinbase. Bleep, bleep. 30 seconds later, I had money transferred from the crypto market. I sold it, transferred it to my bank account in 30 seconds, and I was spending it. So when you can get your money that accessible, that's pretty good. Going from another entity into your bank account and selling the coin, going into your bank account, that's pretty good. And that also attributes to the volatility. It's a little more difficult to do that with the stock market. Apps like Robinhood have helped it, but that's pretty darn fast to be able to sell something and be able to spend it within 30 seconds. That tells you that that's where you say it's really not a scam. There are some out there. I'm not going to kid you. But overall, take a small amount of money, put it in crypto, watch what happens. If you love it, keep on with it. You can slowly increase it. But everybody will tell you who's been in for a while, do not put any money in there you're not willing to lose, because it is volatile. I don't want people to go out there and lose money. I want people to go out there and understand how it works, because I want more people playing in this space ultimately. Not that I'm a big player. I just enjoy it. I like watching the economics of it. We're launching something in my lifetime that'll carry on for years and years and years to come. We're just at the very beginning of it. It's amazing for me to watch. So at the end of the day, I hope this helps you understand the difference between a scam and volatility. And I hope my examples were helpful to you if you haven't been interested in crypto, or you're on the verge, or you don't know what the hell it is. And I hope it gives you some picture of what you're going to be dealing with. Even though we only talked about Bitcoin, if you want to hear about the other coins, stay tuned. We'll keep talking about those, because that's a really important part. Just like a company, there's different types of crypto and there's different things that are done with that. And we'll certainly revisit those in multiple episodes. We've got a couple up there now that address some of these different cryptos. But there you go. Hope this was helpful for you today. And till next time, this is The Chemist signing out.
Thank you for joining us on our journey today. Leave us feedback anywhere so we can give you really bad advice on your crypto questions. Or you can email us directly at cryptoidiots@pm.me. That is cryptoidiots@pm.me. We are looking forward to hearing back from you. And until next time, the idiots have left the building. This podcast references an opinion and is for information purposes only. It is not intended to be investment advice. Seek a duly licensed professional for investment advice.